Appeal number 023088, and that is Corporate Assets, Inc. versus Gus A. Halowian. And Mr. Roberts.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court, my name is Peter Roberts and I represent Corporate Assets, the appellant in this bankruptcy appeal. This appeal arises from a bankruptcy sale in the Dos Graphics bankruptcy, a sale that occurred after two auctions. Corporate Assets was the winning bidder of both auctions and then appeals the bankruptcy court's order permitting the debtor, Dos Graphics, to scrap the results of the first auction in favor of the second auction. At issue in this appeal is the extent to which a bankruptcy trustee, or in this case a Chapter 11 debtor in possession, can be permitted to reopen an auction, notwithstanding its representations on the record of the auction, that it would be final upon its conclusion. In other words, can they change the rules of the game after it's already been played?
But isn't the question in part whether they changed the rules of the game in light of the modification provisions in the bidding procedures themselves and in light of the fact that the sale wasn't going to be final until the bankruptcy court so ruled?
It is, Your Honor. And the modification provisions, I think, needs to be construed in light of the actual auction that they conducted. The modifications provision was, in essence, like a blank check that the bankruptcy court gave to the debtors to conduct the auction in any way as it deemed appropriate to exhaust the bidding and get the maximum value for the estate. But once they filled that check in and proceeded with an auction on which they announced to all the bidders at the auction that today is the day for the auction, today is final, they can't then just be allowed, after having written that blank check, to simply rip it up, approach the bankruptcy court, and ask that the bankruptcy court allow them to convene a second auction altogether.
Well, aren't the debtors... I was going to say, but if that is the question, though. The debtor's attorney had hedged a bit on his description of the finality of the auction, which one could say also fits in with the modification provision. And as long as everybody knew that under the rules of the game, it wasn't really over until it was over. It wasn't really over until the bankruptcy court entered the order. There was a period of less than full certainty from the time between the close of the auction, that first auction, and the time that the parties... It's only 3 days, or 2 days, right? The auction.
2 days, I believe.
Yeah, 2 days and some.
But they decided to seek the second auction within 24 hours of the first.
My understanding of the chronology was there was a sale auction on a Monday, and the sale hearing was on Wednesday, and on a Tuesday night, the night before the sale hearing, they let Corporate Assets know that a late buyer had submitted a new bid. But if I can go back to the question of whether or not the debtor hedged, Corporate Assets believes that if a close examination of the record of the auction itself and the transcript is taken, that this court will find that the debtors didn't hedge at all, that the debtors were actually unequivocal. What the debtor's lawyer said is that, and I should put this in context a little bit, right before convening the auction and asking if there were any bids, the debtor's attorney asked if there were any questions, and in response, one of the bidders asked them, point blank, is today it? Or can somebody come in a couple days from now, the sale hearing, and up their bid? And the response was unequivocal, that as far as the debt is concerned, today is the date for the auction, as far as the debt is concerned, the provisions of the bidding procedures provide that today is the day of the auction. And what they stated is, now obviously I can't tell you that somebody can't walk in off the street and present an offer that's 400% higher than the winning bid, but as far as they were concerned, today was the day for the auction. And I think that's the distinction, is that the debtor represented that it would take the winning bid from the auction and present that to the bankruptcy court for approval.
But
and
isn't there some, I mean, it's a flexible procedure in any event, bankruptcy is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually the court that presented with the evidence that maybe not a $10 million additional offer, but there is a significantly higher potential offer on the table, the $2.45 million. The court decides, in taking into account that this wasn't setting aside an already entered order, this was deciding whether to enter the order in the first place, it was in the best interest of the bankruptcy estate to try to maximize the value. Obviously, this claim is something your client, as the contributor of value, didn't like, but most of the other courts of appeals that have looked at this have said, well, it's a flexible process, kind of a, some of the, say, sliding scale, what have you. And isn't that the correct way to look at it, taking all of these factors into account, the non-finality, the modification provision, the value to the estate that was at least potentially on the table, even more as it turned out?
I think that all that the court of appeal that have addressed this issue, culminating in the Food Barn decision of the Eighth Circuit, have adopted a sliding scale approach. But one of the things that all the courts of appeal, I think, have in common is the adoption of the modern rule of judicial auctions, which was set forth in 1947 by the Third Circuit in the Stanley case, and adopted by the First Circuit in the Gil Byrne case, and have stuck to the principle that in a relatively straightforward auction sale, where one buyer is by far the clear winner at the auction sale, the discretion of the bankruptcy court to upset the terms or to upset that winning bid is lessened proportionately. And I think when you take a look at the transcript of the auction in this proceeding, you'll find that it was emphasized over and over again that what the debtor was going to do was take the winning bid, which was clearly corporate assets, and present it to the bankruptcy court for approval.
But if it's a sliding scale, I mean, I looked at Judge Doyle's opinion, I looked at Judge Bucklow's opinion, it seems to me Judge Doyle was quite aware of the interest in auction finality. She was quite aware of what the rules of this auction were. She took into account the kinds of reasonable expectations that could arise. And I should think in a sliding scale context, our review would be for abuse of discretion. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for me to say, even if it might have been possible equally for her to have said, no, you know, in light of these conversations, I'm going to stop it here and not open up the possibility of this added value. It's hard to say she abused her discretion weighing it the way she did.
Well, I believe that what Judge Doyle did was look at the modifications provision and the bidding procedures as a whole without really taking into account the transcript and the proceedings of the auction itself. And I think that if she had looked at those more thoroughly, she would have seen that the expectations of the buyers were crystallized almost from the beginning of the auction itself when they were told that today is the day for the auction. I see that I'm running into my rebuttal time.
Thank you.
Reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts. Okay, Mr. Malik.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court. I am Terry Malik, and I appear on behalf of Goss International, which this court permitted to intervene in this appeal of corporate assets. First, let me say I appreciate, Justice Woods, that you have saved me the embarrassment of quoting Yogi Berra in the Court of Appeals argument, it ain't over till it's over. Let's talk about Gilbert as a starting point, because there's an interesting history about Gilbert that sheds light on this approach to reasonable expectations. If you read the District Court of Massachusetts opinion in the Wintex case, you will find out that when the Gilbert court reversed and remanded back to the district court to find out whether there was a local custom in that bankruptcy court to accept bids at a hearing, on a sale hearing, the district court indeed found there was a local custom in that bankruptcy court to accept bids and affirmed, instead of reversing, affirmed the higher bid that came in at 2 o'clock. What's that got to do with expectations? Well, the Second Circuit, basically, by reversing and remanding with that instruction, was really asking the question of what were the expectations of the people who showed up at 2 o'clock at that hearing? What were the expectations of the people who showed up telephonically at the bidding procedures, at the bidding auction, on January 21? And where would they look to get those expectations? The expectations were defined in the bidding procedures. Now let's look at the bidding procedures, because that's where this matter really starts, and I would suggest ends. Bankruptcy court approved the bidding procedures by an order of December 20, 2001. Corporate Assets does not deny that they received a copy of the procedures. They do not claim they are unaware of the rules. In fact, in their limited objection filed before Bankruptcy Judge Doyle on January 28th, they claim they relied on those procedures. Now, Bankruptcy Judge Carol Doyle specifically focused in her opinion at pages 24 and 25 at the last sentence of Section 6, a section titled Modifications. But the procedure, bidding procedures contain more than just that one sentence in that one statement. In fact, they contain no less than 6 unequivocal provisions that inform the reader that the debtors have been granted broad latitude in the manner in which it conducted bidding and the manner in which it was to present a bid to the court for approval. I'd quickly point out those provisions. Page 1, paragraph 1.
Mr. Malik, rather than do that, let me ask you another question. Is it relevant at all, in your view, whether the late bidder, Bowling, I guess, was proceeding in good faith or not proceeding in good faith? I think there was a finding that there really was a good faith mistake, but why is their state of mind at all relevant to the integrity of the auction process?
Because I do think it goes to the expectations of the parties and what the expectations were when the bidding commenced. Mr. Roberts points out, and would like the court to review the transcript, so would I, from the 21st of January. Because there are other things going on there. First of all, Mr. Dickerson brings to the attention of the parties that there has been a change to Section 5.1 regarding when the equipment had to be removed. The record shows Bowling did not know of that change prior to that announcement. The other three bidders did, including Corporate Assets. Bowling did not. Bankruptcy Judge Carol Doyle specifically found that Bowling was therefore disadvantaged. Being disadvantaged, she reopened the bidding so that there was a level playing field among the bidders. So I think that the good faith expectation of Bowling was that as the version of Section 5.1 of the asset purchase agreement it had before it had been changed.
Of course, reopening auctions also changes the dynamic of the auction itself, because now everybody has a lot of information about the other people's reservation prices, if you will.
It has information on the bids. It gives parties time to retract and reformulate a bid. Here, Bowling probably retracted and reformulated a bid based on the knowledge it now had more time to remove the machinery and equipment.
What limiting principle would allow what the bankruptcy court did in this case, but would prevent future bidders from abusing the auction process by, you know, lying in the weeds during the first auction and then seeking to reopen the bidding later once they have seen all these things?
It's a matter of reasonable expectations and where you look for those reasonable expectations. Here you look for the reasonable expectations in the bidding procedures. Bankruptcy Court Judge Doyle did something a lot of bankruptcy judges don't do. She stayed out of the fray. If you read all of the cases cited, almost every case, the bankruptcy judge is participating in the auction. Bankruptcy Judge Doyle didn't abuse her discretion because she stayed away. She was not pulled into it. She approved the ground rules, very detailed, very full, on December 20. On December 23, when the debtor seeks an extension of time, she resisted the temptation to give an advisory opinion. She didn't say, I'm going to let you reopen the bidding. She said, let me think about this overnight and come back in the morning. And in the morning, she pointed out that she was wondering to herself last night, what exactly was before me? And what was before was a request for continuance, and she granted it. And then, back on the 29th, she very carefully heard arguments, reviewed the record, and made some determinations in her ruling. And I cannot see how, given the thoughtfulness that was provided in the ruling, the record before her, and especially the bidding procedures, that this could possibly be an abuse of discretion. May I answer any other questions for the court?
Thank you very much. Thank you. Mr. Roberts, 2 minutes.
No, we have a few points on rebuttal. The first would be to point out to the court that, as opposed to Gilburn and its facts and circumstances, the case which is probably most like this case is actually the Stanley Engineering case out of the Third Circuit. Stanley, which is probably the seminal case on articulating the modern rule of judicial auctions, had a situation much like this, where a winning bidder from a auction procedure then at the confirmation hearing found out that there was another buyer who came out of the woodwork and decided that it wanted to offer 10% more for the bid. The bankruptcy court in Stanley realized that its primary goal was maximizing the value of the estate and allowed a second auction to proceed. At the end of the second auction, the winning bid was now 20% higher than the winning bid from the first auction. The Third Circuit found that 20% still wasn't adequate, still didn't shock the conscience enough to merit discarding the result of the first auction. Stanley is also important because it talks about the fact that the standard for overturning the result of a judicial auction has to do with mistake in the conduct of the sale, not mistake with respect to a particular bidder. A mistake like bowling auctioneers made because they didn't bring enough of their bidding group to the auction sale. And although it was made very clear at the beginning of the auction that there had been some changes to the deadline for moving equipment, and Boeing actually confirmed it on the record, it was only because they had mistakenly, on their own end, not figured out the differences and ramifications on their bidding procedure. I see that I'm out of time. I thank your honors for hearing me.
The court thanks you. Mr. Roberts and Mr. Malik, and the case will be taken under advisement. Thank you very much. And the court will be in recess until tomorrow morning at 9:30. Thank you all. Good day.